VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 389, recorded on June 22nd, 2015.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 222nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, particularly E3.
Yeah, so we recorded a half hour or so at E3.
We did. We had some lovely initial impressions.
After waiting online for a couple of hours. Okay, so Paul's going to snap that I only waited about an hour and 15 or a half, while he waited 3 hours.
Oh, I'm not going to snap at you because you gave me your Infinity 3.0 figure.
Yeah. So here's the thing. They're not selling well on eBay, are they? Because they're just...
They were on Tuesday, and then like the price dropped by like 60%.
Because people found out, oh, wait a minute.
They're just pre-sale.
You know, I gotta check because at Bethesda's E3 press conference, they gave me three vinyl figures wrapped in in a plastic display case, which says on the back exclusive at E3. And I'm wondering if those are probably selling well at E3. I mean on eBay.
Well, I mean even the Skylanders vehicle that I got wasn't selling all that well. I mean mine are still listed.
Yeah. So I picked up the Mickey for you. What did you pick up?
I got myself an additional Mickey and a Yoda.
Okay. So
hoping to sell one, clearly.
Yeah, but Darth Maul was not available.
No, Darth Maul was only available, I found out later, if you had an appointment.
Oh.
VIP. They were giving out Darth Maul. That's why there's like one or two of them on eBay.
Okay.
There were at one point.
Yeah. So, anyways... we're going to now play our conversation at E3. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 389, recorded on June 17th, 2015. Hi, this is Jonah Falcon.
This is Paul Novak.
And we are recording this at E3 itself in the last hour of the show.
Live from E3, it's Thursday afternoon.
Well, actually, it's more like... this episode was recorded in front of a live studio audience.
And brought to you by the letter J.
Well, J and P.
Mm. There you go. I wasn't even thinking it.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Jurassic Park.
So anyway, Paul, you spent most of E3 online.
I did. I spent most of E3 online. I spent a good 5 hours on Tuesday online for a free Disney Infinity 3.0 figure.
I want you to explain why it took so long, because they really messed up.
It wasn't so much that they messed up. I mean, I suppose that some things are unavoidable, but they were having some, they had built a interactive experience similar to the cameras that had been on in Times Square, where it'll focus on people on the sidewalk and they can interact with some of their Disney character friends by means of an overhead screen. And the system wasn't really working on Tuesday morning, and unbeknownst to us at the end of the line, they weren't letting anybody through while they were trying to fix this piece of equipment. And so for 3 hours, nobody went through the line, the line did not move, nobody got their figure. And it was really quite distressing. I wish that somebody would have made a different call and had just, started letting people through for that 3 hours without having to interact with this thing. That would have been my call. But I don't get paid to make those decisions.
And also, you had a theory that the fire marshal had a word with him after that?
Oh, yeah. So I went back and got through a second time today, which is, like we said, it's Thursday. And they were much more fastidious about how the line was being regulated.
Well, you said there were five deep on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were five wide on Tuesday, at least. So a portion of the problem was that the line was, instead of getting shorter, the line was getting slimmer. So, but that was pretty well controlled today. And I think I heard a rumor that somebody had mentioned that perhaps they had gotten a fine from the fire marshal, and so they were much more on top of regulating where people's bodies were and that they weren't a fire hazard.
Right. So did you actually get to see any games, rather? Because I know you stood online today as well. Not for quite as long, but...
I did. I saw a lot of things that I was really interested in, and I have to say... sadly, I agree with the public sentiment that I've heard that Nintendo has had a rather disappointing showing. Jonah and I just came back from their booth just to make sure that there wasn't anything I missed before I went on record saying this, but, I mean, there wasn't really anything exciting.
Well, I liked Super Mario Maker, solely because I like level editing.
But from a player perspective, it's like that's a game with very little content. It's a tool set. I'm not even sure that I would call it a game. It's definitely a title for sure. But, you know, there doesn't seem... You know, it's not like a whole bunch of money went into making levels for the player to experience, for example.
Right. So my E3 was not spent online for the most part. You know, I didn't see enough to... this E3 was sort of like, yeah. And the funny thing is, I thought last year's E3 was boring, but compared to last year, this one, there's less. I mean, they sliced 2 hours off the beginning of E3. They're slicing off an hour at the end of E3. Although, to be fair, they're doing it midweek. Usually it's, you know, Friday through Sunday. This time it was Tuesday through Thursday. So that should have allowed it for, you know, an 8-6, or actually a 10-6 showing, but they decided not to...
Friday through the following Sunday?
Like No, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday to Sunday.
I don't know what you've been smoking, but I've never seen an E3 go through that.
Really? I guess...
Like Monday...
I'm confusing it with PAX now.
Oh, see, okay.
All these shows are starting to merge in my brain.
No, I was about to say, like, it's always been like you have to miss work to come to this thing.
Except normally I didn't have any work. Now I have work that I missed, but before it was just... But as for me, you know, I guess my game of show is XCOM 2. You know, there was a game that surprised me in the indie games. There was this geometric game, and I'm sorry to the indie developers for not remembering the game. I'll probably make an addendum after this. But you're a box hurtling through a tunnel, and there are obstacles, right? And it is difficult. But the great thing about it, it's one of those hard games, but... What alleviates that is that you start up immediately at a button press. There's no load time. So if you screw up, you say, okay, go again, right now, you know. And there's something to be said for not having to wait to start, you know. Like some games, you have to wait for whatever cinematics, or even in Mario, you have to wait for the cloud to come, you know.
And the more hands that touch it, the more splash screens you get.
Yeah. This is just say, okay, start from the beginning again, go. You know, so it's very easy to just keep on trying, because I was on 5. I tried the 5. The 5th difficulty, it goes up to 9. And the 5th difficulty is really, 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 really hard. So I can't imagine the 9th level, how hard that must be. But yeah, I mean, there were some games that I really enjoyed. There was Total War Warhammer, which I saw today, which is basically taking the Warhammer license and putting it in Total War. And it was like watching a Peter Jackson film in the battle, you know. These orcs and humans coming up, firing, and it was very cinematic, you know, even though it's a game.
I unfortunately missed that one, but I did get to see my pick for Best in Show, which was, surprisingly enough to me of all people, LEGO Dimensions, I think, is going to be a hot ticket item. They've identified some weaknesses of their competitors' products, namely that you need to have... only one toy active in your game at a time. LEGO Dimensions is shooting for 7 at one time in a single-player game.
Well, isn't that the point of LEGO, is to have different... have Doc Brown and Wildstyle and Batman?
Well, that's the point of all the other Toys to Life category products currently on the market as well. Unfortunately, other companies have made the technical decision to put one character on screen per player. So this is... I mean, there's definitely a different approach to what they're shooting for. Vehicles get their own toys instead of a disc, so it's more similar to Skylanders. But you can change around the vehicles and play with them in new ways. So with the same blocks of the set, so that, you know, you could turn the Batmobile into the Bat-Sonic submarine to get past certain areas of the game. And I thought it was really interesting that they went with that.
Well, it is Lego. I mean, you sort of expect that.
Yeah, it is Lego. Although, on the sad side, I think they're going to stop making individual Lego games for quite a while.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, now the this entire Lego thing started with Star Wars, you know, doing the prequel trilogy, you know, and that sort of kicked off the entire Traveler's Tales Lego games.
Which have been fantastic from game one, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, some people complain about the repetitiveness, like, you know, it's like Lego Indiana Jones, yeah, you know, and all that stuff. You know. I mean, they really started getting it when they started voicing people in Lego Batman 2. But, you know, it's not for everybody because sometimes the puzzles can be diabolic.
Diabolical or, you know, not.
I don't know. It's just like Lego Batman. I haven't been able to get past the first page because I can't figure out what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's because you're old.
Yeah. That's because I'm old. But we do have news items, surprisingly enough. Now, only one of us is going to be reading them off me because, you know, we don't have show notes.
And I'm surprisingly okay with that.
Yeah. So, let's see. Oh, you know what? That's the wrong page. Dee-dee-dee-dee. Here we are. Okay. So, the first news item... As soon as it loads up, I don't know why it's reloading like that. Fortunately, now here's the thing about E3 and Wi-Fi is usually terrible, you know, especially if you go further in. You know, it's fine if you're, say, near an open door, but actually, Paul tried the Wi-Fi, the E3 Wi-Fi for $20.
They charged me $20 for 24 hours of internet access, and it didn't even work in all areas of the convention hall. Specifically, it didn't work in the places where the cellular reception sucked also, so it was like you're really stranded even after paying for it. I'm pissed. I should get my money back.
I wonder if a lot of people did it, and they jammed it up. But, you know, I think, I don't know how many people would, I don't know. I mean, gamers, for the most part, and I'm not going to include you in this, are generally cheap, you know, and they don't tend to pay for things. So I can't imagine that a lot of people paid for the, you know, they have to talk to the LA convention. It's an LA convention center problem. It's not an E3 problem. It's an LA convention center problem.
Well, I heard a rumor that they're looking for a new venue for next year, so.
Ooh, you know, I would like them to do it at New York, just so I can avoid having to fly.
No, there's talk about moving it to the Anaheim Convention Center.
You know, I don't think I've ever been to Anaheim. You know, maybe I have and I didn't know it.
You haven't been to Disneyland?
No, actually, and I was actually toying with the idea of going on Friday tomorrow.
We're not friends anymore.
I'm not much of an amusement park person anymore, and for the most part, I couldn't afford to go beyond New York, New Jersey. So it's, you know, and after that, I just didn't have a chance. I mean, I would love to go to Disney World / Disneyland, you know, but
those are two separate things, Joe.
I know they are. Either go to California or go to Florida. Yes, I get it.
There's really no hope for you anymore. I'm sorry.
Well, Epcot Center's in Florida, right? So, did they stop Captain EO down there? No? Okay. So, our first news item. And by the way, there's a certain theme to this week as well, and it deals with the feminine persuasion, for the most part. Sony was worried about a female protagonist in Killzone Dev's new IP, and this comes to us from Polygon. As a matter of fact, all these articles come from Polygon. Horizon Zero Dawn, the new game from the makers of Killzone, was sort of a title that Shoei Yoshida, head of Sony Computer Entertainment's head of Worldwide Studios, made him nervous. It was, he told me in a recent interview, easily the biggest announcement he made at PlayStation press conference this week. More nerve-wracking to Yoshida than news of The Last Guardian on PlayStation 4. Time out. I still don't believe The Last Guardian is coming out. And if it does come out, I think it's going to be a broken mess.
Well, thank you for that editorial, but I have no opinion.
Okay. Personally, The Last Guardian was emotionally important, a great reveal, but for me, this announcement of Horizon from Guerrilla Games is actually the biggest project for me this E3 to announce, because it's a big project and a new IP. I was nervous to the reaction from people. There was a third reason that Yoshida was very nervous to see how people would react to the game. Horizon's protagonist is a young woman. She's a female lead character, he said. There's always been this vision by the team, but we had a discussion. Is it risky to do a female character? And my eyes are rolling already. In fact, in one development once development was underway, so many questions were asked about the protagonist internally that the company brought in a marketing team to do some focus testing. The concern came from after the game was in development. We started to show it to many more people internally, and they had questions about it. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to continue on because of this, because I do not believe, well, maybe it is for Sony, that they would be so nervous about a female protagonist.
I think that I find it really difficult to believe that that is a company standpoint on this project as opposed to an individual opinion. There are lots of strong female characters in video games.
Well, for one thing,
but there's a demand for more.
I mean, for one thing, we can just go straight to Lara Croft. You know, and you also have Samus, if I remember.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. But what about, what was that game with the photos that I saw today at Square Enix's?
I don't remember it either.
Square Enix has another one where the protagonist is a 14-year-old girl. And then there's Last of Us. And, like, you know, this is not really a surprising thing anymore. And for any company to be afraid of it is really kind of...
But Eternal, is it a Japanese thing? I mean...
Well, it's borderline misogynistic is what it is.
I don't know. It just surprises me that they'd be nervous to see how gamers would react to a female protagonist. We've had them. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. More people do a female Commander Shepard than they do a male Commander Shepard in Mass Effect, I found out.
Not when I play it.
You play it a male? Yeah, well, I said it in mine. Mine was blonde-haired, green-eyed, you know. I always wanted to do a commercial that is called My Shepard. You know, My Shepard died on Vermeer. My Shepard, you know, that sort of thing, you know. Wait, how did you make your... Did you make... You own Mass Effect, right?
No, I've played some of the other Mass Effects, but not the latest one.
Oh, okay. So how did you build your Shepard? You just got me curious now.
I'm sorry?
How did you build him? I mean, what did he look like?
Oh, I don't remember. He probably blonde hair, blue eyes, and lots of muscles.
I don't think he can affect muscular.
You know, just like me.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just strange. I mean, but what's disturbing is something I did not notice, and hopefully because they pulled these things down, or maybe they did. Once again, this is our friends from Gamergate going on. Again from Polygon, like I said, it's going to be running, all these are from Polygon. Any feminist frequency pamphlets appear on polls around E3 convention. Letter-sized stickers appeared in traffic light poles around the convention center this morning, and this morning being June 18th, so that's today. So maybe that, I didn't see it the last 2 days. I didn't investigate until now. Decrying Anita Sarkeesian, creator and host of Tropes vs. Women in Video Games, and positive female characters in video game series. The quote-unquote femme freak flyer stood in stark contrast to the typical advertising found around the convention center celebrating the upcoming release of anticipated video games. The bottom of the flyer says, "All your tropes belong to us, honey," and the background repeats the hashtag Gamergate. This year's E3 has seen a marked improvement in representation of women in gaming, in both how they are treated in video games and how many have been involved in presenting games on stage, talking about them in interviews, and playing them in demos. And I can cite one right off the bat is Bonnie Ross, who runs one of the biggest video game franchises, Halo, you know.
You know what? This is... To me, this is a really unfortunate and antagonistic action, but I really do think it was taken by one, maybe two people, and it's really unfortunately marring was otherwise a very inclusive event this year.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that there's going to be more and more women in video games, and these guys had better get used to it.
There have been women in video games since there were video games.
I mean, prominent, let's put it that way, you know, in positions of visibility, like Bonnie Ross and others, what was her name, Jade Raymond, you know. So the thing is that, but this sort of reminds me a little bit of, you know how it is. It's not longer okay, at least in the northern states, to show the Confederate flag. Huh. You know, I mean, in other places, especially with the recent tragedy, you know.
If the sign had said something to the effect of "niggers get out," there would have been a public outcry.
Yeah. Or even, you know, even "faggots get out," you know.
Maybe there would have been some stirring of it, but I really I want to make sure that the story gets spread, because quite frankly, our sisters in game development deserve our respect and our support.
And you know, you can disagree with Anita Sarkeesian, you know. I mean,
as I do.
You know, but just because you think she's wrong doesn't make her a bad person, doesn't make her, you know, doesn't make her anything negative, just differing points of opinion. And, you know, that's one thing about video game nerds that I've noticed, is that there's no such thing as different points of opinion. It's I'm right, you're wrong, that's it, case closed, and you can never convince me otherwise, and go away, you know.
Yeah, I just think it's a really sorry kind of action and deplorable. And sadly, they're not going to catch anybody who did it, but, you know, God knows. God's watching you.
You know, but I get the impression that they were not invited to E3, so, or else they wouldn't be posting these flyers. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something, you know. There's no more in video games having the treehouse with girls, no girls allowed, spell with a U, of course. You know, they're in the treehouse, you can't kick them out, so deal with it.
I mean, like, what is so wrong with women being equal? Like, I don't understand. Just because somebody else has something doesn't mean you no longer have whatever it is that you have.
You know, someone posted a tweet, posted a tweet by the guy, I forget his name, this Uni or whatever, long last name, I think he has a Greek last name. And what he tweeted in 8 words told you everything you need to know about Gamergate. He tweeted, if they say they were raped, they're probably lying.
Excuse me?
That's what he tweeted.
Oh no, that's not okay. That is not okay.
See, I wish I had a video camera so you could see the expression on Paul's face. If you ever want to go to a dictionary where you see the word disgust, you'd see Paul's face right now next to it.
I'm not going to take our wonderful experience and our wonderful podcast really down a dark road, but that's just another comment that is completely unacceptable. And let's see what happened to him and see if we believe him when he says it.
Yeah, I actually said the same thing, and someone said, well, you know, what's it called? These men's rights people don't believe male rape exists, but it does. Anyways, let's go to a little bit lighter thing. From Polygon, Reggie Fils-Aimé, Paul's best friend here. Iwata didn't apologize for Nintendo's E3. We make great games. He said, to be perfectly clear, Nintendo president Satoru Iwata didn't apologize, according to Reggie Fils-Aimé. It was not an apology, he said. It was not a statement about the content we're showing. It was essentially an I hear you message. The non-apology, the message, was a tweet sent out by Iwata, seemingly in reaction to a tidal wave of negative outline reaction to the company's E3 Nintendo Direct this week. One translation by a new NeoGAF user, Cheesemeister. Thank you for watching. We take opinions of this year's digital event seriously, and we'll work better to meet your expectations. But Fils-Aimé said the translation isn't exactly right and misses some context. Mr. Iwata was in Japan. What he's saying, what he's trying to do is explain to consumers in Japan what's going on at E3. He said. The correct translation of the message was, quote, thank you for your feedback. We hear you and we're committed to continuing to meet your expectations, was essentially his message, unquote. Apology or not, but it was certainly spurred by the reaction to the games and news Nintendo pushed out at E3. Many fans reacted with vitriol, either disappointed with what was said or what wasn't said, or what was said. Nearly 12,000 fans signed a petition on change.org, oh, this is always good, to try and convince Nintendo not to continue developing one of the newly announced games, Metroid Prime Federation Force, which is a spinoff.
Yeah, I was just at the booth. I didn't even see the Metroid game.
But Reggie Fils-Aimé said he was unfazed by the reaction. One of the things I find interesting is that if you look at E3 historically for Nintendo, typically what happens is a press briefing happens or a digital event happens. And then over the course of the next couple of days, people see the games and get to play the games, and appreciative understanding of what we're doing increases over those 3 days, and then continues to build into the holidays. Which is true. I mean, you could have a negative reaction at the games first, but as you start playing it and as you start seeing what it's about.
I think the larger disappointment is that there really seems to be nothing, if anything, new or exciting that has been announced or that is coming to the Wii U. I mean, the speculation that I've heard on this is that it really is Nintendo kind of accidentally sending a message that they're abandoning their hopes for the Wii U, and that anything that they're planning to develop on a large scale, you know, another Mario, another Zelda, you know, Smash Brothers, you know, even announcing that another Smash Brothers is coming, or a full-fledged Metroid, you know, that they're going to be saving those things for their next generation of hardware.
Well, you know, it's not entirely untrue. I mean, the slow start by the Wii U, you know, sort of crippled it. And a lot of people said that the Wii U should have been what they should have released earlier. I think Jordan said that about 100 times, you know. I don't know. I mean, one person I know was really disappointed with Star Fox. I know you don't care because I think you said that you were tired of just recycling old IPs.
I really am. I mean, I think especially since they went to the trouble of developing some pretty fantastic new hardware with peripheral that we hadn't seen before, that they really didn't spend enough time developing a unique IP that hinges on that hardware.
The other thing I remember, the game that utilized the tablet screen was that Mario, in which you're ghosts and you're hiding from Mario, and one person's, you know, playing the ghosts on the, yeah, I know. You know, I just wonder, what has been your favorite game on the Wii U so far? I mean, you really don't discuss it that much.
Sadly, I think all of my favorite games for the Wii U have been third party. You know, Disney's Infinity and Batman Arkham City and Arkham Origins. But it's like Nintendo made all of this hardware advances thinking that, what, somebody else would make interesting gameplay out of it for them? Like, that just seems really off.
Well, didn't the Batman games allow you to use your screen as a you know, when you're doing the code locking and stuff like that?
Well, the biggest feature of the tablet is that every game can be played solely on the tablet, and that's why I enjoy it, because
you
having
go away from the TV.
Exactly. No, not even go away from the TV. I could put something else on my TV so that I could know. You know, so I could put something on in the background while I play. And it really seems like almost every single time there is something on the tablet exclusively, it's some extra menu that could just as easily be, you know, where the pause button screen is.
Okay. So, you know, I forgot to mention that I was at the conferences, three of them. I couldn't do all of them. Bethesda took down the house with Fallout 4, and I'm actually currently playing, and we should have done a what are you currently playing thing. I'm actually currently playing the free game that they announced on iOS, which is Fallout Shelter, which is basically sort of like Tiny Tower meets XCOM meets... there was a game that in which you send people out on missions and they come back with stuff. It's pretty fun. And one of the things that people are impressed with is, A, you don't have to be online to play it. And B, the microtransactions are really, you know, you can buy extra lunch boxes, which basically give you stuff, you know. And they're 99 cents if you, you know, or you can do the package deals. But otherwise, you know, I guess that's why, you know, it shows that Apple actually helped Bethesda with this, because it's a really clean product. So, Paul, what have you, did you say what you've been playing, or?
Well, all day long, I've been playing a brand new game, which I absolutely suck at, which is called Find Me a Goddamn Aspirin.
Well, E3 is almost over, so either your headache's going to go away, or at least you'll get to a CVS.
And for anyone who's never been, like, E3 is... Wow. Almost quite literally a media circus. I mean, there's music, there's people shouting. I'll be surprised if you guys can't hear, you know, the hyper at the Nintendo booth calling out to the crowd. And it's days of that relentlessly. And after a while, you know, it starts to take a toll. We get a little cranky. Some people need to be reminded to shower.
Yeah, actually, Harold Goldberg, who does the New York Critics Awards, tweeted the same thing. So, yeah, it's been an interesting E3. We'll be recording the other half of this podcast another time, since this one is pretty short. We don't have much news to say. Basically, all the news are, hey, E3 is here, you know, and there are new games.
Yeah, and we went.
So, anyways, this has been part one of the podcast, and hold on for the part where we're not in the middle of noise and stuff like that.
And hopefully I won't have a headache then anymore.
That's true. Well, like I said, CVS is your friend.
We'll be right back.
So that was our witty conversation. Sitting, It was the last hour, actually. I think it was like 4 o'clock.
It was like the last like half hour of the last.
Yeah, and we were sitting. Yeah, we were sitting in a lunch area an eating area that was near Nintendo. So the thing is that we were both out of it. We really didn't. I forgot a lot of things that I should have talked about.
Like what?
For one thing, I said my game of show was XCOM 2. I forgot entirely that Fallout 4 was also at part of it was that was revealed on a Sunday, right? And
I didn't forget. I did.
And the thing is it felt like last year almost. When you're doing E3, it's so intense for 3 days. The 2 days before it are like something that happened a long time ago, old news, that sort of thing. So
yeah, it's difficult to keep up.
But I'm still going to go with XCOM 2, even though Fallout 4 is amazing. And as a matter of fact, Alpha Shard has invited me to do his podcast about Fallout 4.
Oh, so well, I see how that goes, Alpha Shard.
It's cross-promotion.
I see what you're doing there.
It's cross-promotion.
Not that invitations are sent out to everybody. That's all I'm saying.
Did you have anything to say about Fallout 4?
Well, no, I'm just saying. It would have been nice to have been asked.
Yeah. So
go a little Catholic fluff on your ass.
Yeah, and like I said,
I've been watching Orange Is the New Black in like marathon because I needed to catch up from E3.
Yeah, and Paul thinks I have no soul because I haven't watched it yet.
Oh my God, you're going right to hell.
But the thing is, I plan to watch it. That's one of the great things about being on Netflix. It's going to be there. They're not going to take it away.
Don't even. They take things off of Netflix every month.
Well, not their shows. Not their original shows. They have the rights to those.
Meh, we'll see.
You think they're going to take away, say, the first season of Orange Is the New Black? I guess if they want to sell DVDs.
Yeah.
But then again, having DVDs never stopped Netflix from... But they'll probably have their DVDs for rent. Oh, anyways. I haven't seen it, but I do want to see it. There are a lot of... there are a lot of digital television shows that are coming out. It's a new thing.
You know what's really weird is that Netflix has started to do something even more innovative than it's releasing all of its digital season at once. And that's releasing each episode of a Netflix original series one every week.
Okay.
Frankly, I want to shoot myself. The show's not interesting enough for me to care every week, frankly.
Okay. You just want to see them all in one sitting.
Yeah, I mean, even all in one sitting, it wouldn't be interesting.
Oh.
But, I mean, whatever. It just really surprised me that they were starting to muck around with a really successful business model at the moment.
Well, what if they started doing Doctor Who? Would you watch then?
Maybe.
Well, that's the BBC anyway, so... So what have you been playing in the few days since you came? Well, you didn't come back. You're still in LA.
It's in where I call home now. I have been playing Heroes of Magic 2 almost obsessively, and I
really
don't understand why.
Well,
I got it on the Humble Bundle a few weeks ago. I can't stop playing. I think I've been playing it for like 48 hours straight.
Apparently, since you're yawning.
Well, I mean, hey. Obsessions are kind of hard to explain.
Heroes of Might and Magic 2 was my first delve into that series, and that was back in 96, and I know this because it was the first time I had a really nice paying job, so I was buying games left and right, and the one thing about Heroes of Might and Magic 2, and I think you'll agree, is that the interface is so candy clean, candy coated and clean with nice sound effects, and it just feels like, I'm not going to say it feels like a game, even though it's a game, it feels like, I don't know. It feels like Candy Crush, except...
You want a man who look like a man?
I think it's like the Candy Crush of strategy RPGs.
Wow. That's a fantastically shallow interpretation.
Oh, keep in mind, I love the game, and I know how deep it is. I'm just talking about the visuals, right? I'm just talking about the interface, and how inviting it is. That's what really hooked me, And then the more you play, the more deep it gets. But I'm just saying, initially... That's what hooks you, right? It's just so inviting.
But it wasn't anything that wasn't par for the course at the time.
Yeah, but there's something about the synergy of the graphics and the music and the way it played, There's just something about it. Sometimes games just have that it factor. You know, when you start playing, you say, oh, yeah, this is working.
I mean, it's an extremely complex game. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nonsense you have to learn in order to get good at it. And some boards, like, you'll never get good at. You just kind of have to blunder your way through luck sometimes.
Yeah, when I got the special edition of Heroes 5, it came with all the Might and Magics. So maybe I'll see if I can't, you know, I'm pretty sure some of my Heroes of Might and Magic 2 maps are out there, too.
Oh, my God. I have been playing the 10th board of...
The campaign is brutal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing the 10th board of the campaign for, like, I think... Oh, my God. I want to say, like, going on 24 hours straight?
Yeah, the campaign of the Heroes of Might and Magic games, at least the first three... I mean, not the first three. I mean, 2, 3, and 4. They can be... Yeah, they can be really hard.
This is brutal.
Yeah.
And this thing's kicking my ass all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, you have to really be exact on raising, you know, buying troops and managing your buildings and just getting it just so that you can withstand when all of a sudden they come tromping along with their massive army, you know?
I'm making frequent use of the save function.
Yeah, this is not a strategy game that handholds.
And now there's more black dragons coming. God damn it.
Mm. And this is before they start doing all sorts of dragons, like in 3, fairy dragons and ghost dragons. And
at the moment, the one I'm playing, which is the second installment in the series, is red dragons apparently become black dragons.
Yes.
I'm like, that's not how that works.
No, it's actually, wasn't it green to red to black?
They're all different creatures. All the colors are different creatures.
Okay.
They shouldn't be. My point is that in no Gygaxian mythological setting has there ever been it changes from color to color as it grows up. I mean,
I don't think they're growing up. They're just upgrading them. I mean, you turn pikemen into halberd. No. See,
well, I mean,
to...
they just called something different. They still have pikes. Is my point.
Yeah. Anyways, we're gonna move.
Anyway, as you upgrade, you know, your units, they basically only have a color shift because it saves on resources.
Right. I'm still playing Fallout Vault. And I've gotten to the point in which my vault is just humming along. My last rating was an A-.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, so but the raiders are getting tougher, but the thing is that it's at the point in which you expand at the rate that you want to. I mean, when I get my 45th person in there, I'll unlock a new room. A new type of room. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's rough going when you first start playing it, but once
45th person?
The 41st Vault Dweller. Sometimes they show up at your door, or you have a radio station, or of course, you know, you have two Vault Dwellers have sex and they give birth to a baby.
Oh, lovely.
So, you know.
Reproductive game.
Yeah, that's one element of it. Yeah. But they dance before they have sex, so.
Well, I mean, as long as there's a little courtship.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they the male and female give each other these outrageous pickup lines. You know, it's like...
Well, I mean, what's any courtship ritual without a good pickup line?
Yeah. And it's a good game. It's nothing that's... You know, the thing that it has going for it is basically the Fallout license, you know, and okay. It's very cute. But it's a tiny tower, but a tipped on its side, you know. I mean, it's a little more complex than that, but, you know, it's just one of those games in which you're getting people, you're trying to make them happy, you know, say, don't get sick and die, you know, that sort of thing.
Because, I mean, if they get sick and die, that's going to really suck.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news now. This first article is an opinion piece, and I'd be very interested to see what you think of it, Paul, at the end.
Okay.
Fahey, Nintendo should pull out of E3 entirely, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. According to the writer of this article, Rob Fahey... no, that's wrong.
Who is Rob Fahey?
Rob Fahey is the lawnmower man. Remember? That was Rob Fahey.
I was wondering why that sounded familiar.
Yeah, he was the lawnmower man. No. The name of the writer is... it is Rob Fahey. So he has the same name. Oh, no, Jeff Fahey was Lawnmower Man. Rob Fahey is the writer of this article. Jeff Fahey was the Lawnmower Man.
I've got nothing to do.
Well, anyways. Jeff A. says, you know a company that has had a particularly miserable E3 when, before the show is even over, one senior executive finds himself having to officially deny that another senior executive had apologized for their state of their E3 offerings. And we did cover this at E3.
We did. We spoke about it.
Yeah.
In depth.
And you just heard it, because I, you know. According to Fahey, Nintendo, or at least part of Nintendo, perhaps the Japanese part, didn't want to be at E3. That's partly related to NX. The company is the only platform holder that has acknowledged that it's working on future hardware, but isn't going to say anything about it until 2016. It is also too early to talk about its mobile titles, and E3 is probably not the venue for that anyway. And Iwata... What?
Fair enough. I mean, E3 kind of really isn't the great mobile announcement space that some mobile developers would want it to be.
Yeah. And Iwata confirmed prior to the event that it wouldn't talk about its health, lifestyle, and education-related products at a purely gaming event like E3. Nintendo doesn't feel like it fits well with E3 right now. It's not just troubled by the dismal sales of the Wii U. It's also deeply uncomfortable with being the only major company in the industry that's still seriously committed to family entertainment. It knows that no matter how wonderful its software and franchises are, they make problematic bedfellows to the mainstream of distinctly adult-focused games and the monetization of violent nostalgia for 30-somethings. By going digital rather than having a staged event, by replacing its executives with lovable puppets, by giving developers lengthy meandering videos to chat about the creative process after showing off the new trailers, by refusing to talk about anything but the immediate future of its software lineup, by these decisions and more, Nintendo said, we're not playing the E3 game, and attempted to dodge the inevitably negative contrasts with Sony and Microsoft. It didn't work. It didn't work because it's intrinsically a dishonest approach, one that not only failed to establish a Nintendo difference, in quotes, that denied negative contrasts, but also robbed the company of the chance to make a decent fist out of its showing. Nintendo hobbled its own event, making it even more disappointing than it needed to be, and all it achieved was to make itself look even weaker, even more troubled next to the might of Sony and Microsoft. Here's what Nintendo should have done, should have had the courage to do. Nothing. They should have held no digital event. The company is absolutely correct to think its approach and its products don't fit E3 as it stands, but absolutely wrong to think it could avoid the resulting negativity by just downscaling its involvement. Nintendo's decision ought to have been go home, not can we make it? Can we go just a bit small and hope for the best? This would not be unprecedented. Faced with a similar disconnect between their games and much of the rest of the industry's direction, Nintendo, by far the largest games company in Japan, has spurned involvement in the Tokyo Game Show for many, many years. Being at TGS made no sense for the company. This decision has never hurt Nintendo one jot, not in the way that a rubbish, half-hearted TGS conference every year would have been. Precisely the same logic applies to E3. Imagine if Nintendo had skipped E3 entirely. Sure, there would have been a lot of hand-wringing and pearl-clutching in the media over it, but it would have been over soon, and a few people writing Nintendo were conspicuous by their absence in their show reports as hardly the end of the world. Then this week's digital event could have been held as an ordinary digital event a month or 6 weeks later. Call it Nintendo's preview of the next 6 months. So, Paul, what do you think? Do you think Nintendo should have just said, skip E3 altogether?
Well, I think it's important to remind our listeners at this point that this is clearly an opinion piece.
This is an opinion piece.
One with which I don't really agree. Not in all of its finer minutia. I mean, I have no idea who this writer is.
Rob Fahey, from Games Industry Biz.
Yeah. I don't know. I think his criticism of the entire strategic direction of the company as far as focusing on family entertainment is completely hubristic. So I'm going to leave that part of it.
Well, wait, define hubristic there.
Basically, who the hell is this guy to tell Nintendo that they shouldn't be catering to families?
No, he didn't say that. He said that...
That's what it sounds like.
No, what he said was that Nintendo's strength is its family programming, but it doesn't match well with E3. I mean,
well, with what he wants E3 to be.
No, what E3 is. Well, let me put it this way. Bethesda, Microsoft, Sony, Ubisoft, and Square Enix, all they did was show a lot of people firing guns, you know, and people ate that up. I mean, they did eat up EA doing that Unraveled. Have you seen Unraveled?
No.
It's that, you might have seen it, it's that Red Yarn thing, which is a puzzle platformer.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I mean, aside from that, you know, what he's saying is that that lineup doesn't mesh with E3. I mean, people don't respond to it as much. I mean, Microsoft and Sony have...
Entirely untrue.
Is it?
I think the problem... I'm going to move past, you know, the thoughts of E3 in general as being something that should be catering solely to first-person shooter straight boy fans.
No, but the thing is that... Wait. I'm just going to say, no one thinks that. No one thinks it's...
Well, that's exactly what it sounds like this guy's saying.
If you
don't make first-person shooters, you shouldn't go to E3.
But here's the thing.
Fuck this guy.
Nintendo skips Tokyo Game Show. Skips it entirely. And it's successful without needing TGS. I think the thing that the writer is asking is E3 necessary for Nintendo success? And he's saying, no, it isn't. Nintendo should just, you know... He's saying that Nintendo should either go one of two ways. They either should just skip out, or they should go wholeheartedly. They shouldn't just go somewhere in the middle, you know, and try and have a presence without actually having a, you know... He's saying that they shouldn't have gone in the middle. Either do it all or do nothing.
Well, I mean, yeah, and this comes... Perhaps that is the crux of his message, but this comes on the heels of a rather lengthy critique about trying to cater to family gaming at E3. I think his analysis of E3 and its function in the games industry is off base. But we're going to move on because I'm not going to win that argument right now. What is going to be interesting for our listeners is that I think that Nintendo really just needed to have a larger announcement. Basically, they just kind of admitted that they have nothing coming up in the next 6 months that they're ready to talk about. Not even really the next 6 months, between now and September.
Yeah.
When things start going on sale for the Christmas season. That's what E3 is. E3 is an invitation to the media for the games companies to show what they'll be selling, so that buyers know what they're purchasing.
And, you know, I think Nintendo will have a bigger presence in next year's E3 because I think that's when they're going to announce what their next console is going to be. Because they're working on it, you know.
The next console, or definitely the last hurrah for the Wii.
Well, that, you know,
the Wii U rather. So I mean, maybe they'll have like a Mario and Zelda for the Wii U's final E3.
Because the console they're working on is codenamed the NX. He mentioned in the episode. So,
right.
It'll be interesting. But you know, just so you know, that is our question of the weekend. We'll get back to it. After all the news items are done, that will be our question. So, moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Starting today, GameStop is selling retro consoles and games. And this comes to us from GameSpot.
Yeah, that's funny. GameStop and GameSpot. You know, GameSpot is reporting on GameStop.
Remember all those games you played when you were a kid? You mean the ones sitting in my living room? Now you can buy them again. Starting today, GameStop is selling retro games and systems online and in its stores. Games are available from six consoles: the N64, the Super Nintendo, the original Nintendo Entertainment System, Sega Dreamcast, Sega Genesis, and the original PlayStation. Be cautious, however. All of the games being sold in this new program are pre-owned. You'll have to turn to eBay for another retailer or any mint-condition factory-sealed software you've been looking for. The most expensive games include... Conker's Bad Fur Day for the N64 at $80. Sudoku 2 for the PlayStation at $90. And Canon Spike for the Dreamcast at $80. This marks the beginning of vintage hardware and software sales for the store, which often phases out old games in favor of newer consoles. The store stopped selling PlayStation 2 games, for example, in 2013, but began again in March because of high demand.
You know, this goes right back to a question of the week we had a couple of weeks ago, in which we discussed older games, you know, and where the place for them. And apparently GameStop, see, I'm doing it too, GameStop is saying, you know what? People don't want to give up those old games just like that, and they don't want to have to deal with emulators. They want to play retro games on their retro consoles, you know? They still have value.
And in the same way that, like, you know, Disney still released hundreds of thousands of copies of Frozen on VHS, not domestically, but they still, you know, the product still does exist, it's going to be a part of GameStop's GameStop's overall financial strategy.
So, yeah. So you said you have an older console near you right now. Is it the original NES?
I mean, I can't seem to part with a console or a console game. I mean, so I have like everything I've ever owned.
It took me every single mite of will I had to toss out my Amiga 500. It was a sad day.
You're going straight to hell for that, and when you do, I'm going to be there to point and laugh.
But I have an Amiga emulator. But the thing is, I didn't know where all the software was, so it was sort of like holding onto a keyboard that I really couldn't use. You know, I mean, I felt sad, but it just had to happen. And I'm going to tell you, I love my Amiga more than any other computer I had, more than PC, more than MS-DOS, more than Windows. You know, I mean, my C64, I still have one somewhere here. It's probably buried somewhere, but I might have to toss that too, you know. Who knows? It's hard enough. I still have my original launch NES, though, with Robbie the Robot. And I don't have the light gun. I have no idea where the light gun went. I think maybe my mother tossed it out at some point.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a reason why there was a huge excitement at the Microsoft conference when they announced the 30 Rare Games bundle, you know.
Okay.
Because people...
Give our listeners some background on that.
Well, Microsoft is releasing a bundle of 30 Rare games, including old titles like Battletoads up through Viva Piñata, you know, all the stuff
Viva Piñata! Yeah, that was early 90s.
Yeah, well, actually, I think it was 2000... No, it was... Viva Piñata was released on the Xbox One, if I remember correctly. I know it's a 2004 game, maybe, so... anyway...
Okay. I mean, I don't care enough about the dates to.
Well, that was one of the games that Microsoft made for the DS, if you remember.
I mean, was that the only platform that it appeared on?
No. It was on Microsoft platform. It was on Microsoft platforms that I know because it was backwards compatible on the Xbox 360. So yeah, it was an original Xbox One, original Xbox because there's a new Xbox One, the old Xbox One game, you know. And you know, and these are not updated remakes, right? These are just emulated versions of it. You know, Battletoads. Okay. It's not a new Battletoads. It's the old, same old, difficult as heck Battletoads. And people have a desire. You know, this caused a huge cheer from my section. People were itching to see what a Rare announcement Microsoft was going to make, and this was one of them. And they went bonkers. They loved it, you know. So people still have, you know, they still have nostalgia for those games. They still have fun, and
well,
I think
of course they do. I mean, Humble Bundle is making a fortune selling ported versions of old games. I mean, I'm sitting here playing Might and Magic 2 for crying out loud.
And that was a 1996
game.
Game
is like 30 years old at this point.
No, it's 19 years old. Come on, Paul.
Okay, I said like 30 years old.
Okay.
I mean, come on. To half of our listeners who are like 15.
Let's see. What games were released? Was the Bard's Tale? The original Bard's Tale, I think, was released in 1985. Anyway, the original Might and Magic, the role-playing game on which that uses the license, I think was released in 1985. You know, that was one of the... I think that was the first open-world game that I can think of. Anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, so
no, it was Zelda, 1984.
Okay. Anyway.
What?
It's open world in the way we think of open world, that's your definition.
You're confusing current Zelda with original Zelda, and current Zelda is not open world.
I know about the original Zelda. I have the gold cart right there. Anyway, so...
I'm not getting into this conversation of who knows more about Zelda because I'm going to win and embarrass you on the air.
Anyway.
<Ew.
laughs> So, moving on from that.
So, oh, come on, I'm just funning you.
No, you're not. You're deadly serious. You're ready to break out the Zelda knowledge and just crush me.
Why does everybody think I have such a stick up my butt?
It's not a stick up your butt, it's competitiveness.
I'm really not.
And it's your Zelda love.
I'm really not that competitive person.
Hmm. So, getting back to the topic at hand, like I said, this harkens back to our previous Now, the previous question of the week, though, dealt with mostly PC games, right? Because there was always the question of Abandonware. Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, it went around because there's no question that, you know, people have their old consoles. Some people have their old consoles, and they keep their collections. Which is why, by the way, Xbox's backwards compatibility announcement was so huge. Because... Right. For the past few years, there was this thought that no one cares about backwards compatibility, and that's just not true.
Right. I mean, it was hardware manufacturers trying to tell the public not to care about backwards compatibility because it didn't suit them financially.
And what this does is it allows people who own their Xbox 360 for Microsoft to say, oh, listen, you know what? You're not going to lose a lot of your library because we're going to have these games available for you for the Xbox One. And that's what made the transition going to the original Xbox, the Xbox 360, a little easier because they had limited backwards compatibility, which they just kept on adding titles.
Right,
you know?
And this was before the consumer public was trained to consider hardware disposable after 2 years.
But so Nintendo never thought that.
Nobody knew at the time that this would, you know, that they'd be constantly releasing new console.
But the thing is, Nintendo never thought that, because when I had my GBA, I could play Game Boy Color games. When I got the DS, I could play GBA games on it, you know, and you can play DS games on your 3DS, you know, so Nintendo understands that. I mean, the Wii was 100% backwards compatible with the GameCube, you know. And the Wii U was, you know, you had Wii games that you could play on it. You know, it wasn't until...
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously not going to go, you know, from the Wii all the way back to the original NES, because that's just going to be, a nightmare of hardware. But, I mean, definitely going back one generation should be the norm in this industry.
At launch, especially.
It really irritates me that it's not. I completely disagree with the thought that there should be like a launch version that is retroactive and 6 months later a version that isn't. I think that's ridiculous.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean at launch, the backwards compatibility should be available. You know, and maybe after 3 years, you know, when the older console has finally died, you know,
yeah,
when no one's buying it.
That, but like, I mean, because the PlayStation 2 has been on the market for what I consider to be like a record length in modern history.
2000? No.
And like it went from like the original version for like 4 years and then they released that slim version for like $50 after, you know, and that was on the market for another 3 years.
Hmm.
So I'm just saying, if they're going to do a slimline SKU that, you know, doesn't come with a DVD player or whatever, then I think that's one situation, but
so we're going to move on to the next item. Go, this is me.
Thank you.
Jar Jar Binks is in Disney Infinity 3.0, but unplayable. And this comes to us from Polygon. You won't be able to play as Jar Jar Binks when Disney Infinity 3.0 delivers Star Wars to its Toys to Life franchise, but you will be able to beat him up. The Episode 1 CGI Gungan from Naboo will be both a mission giver in the game's campaign and a spawnable townsperson in the toy box mode. And maybe one day he'll be playable. Anything is possible, said Ada Duan. I think it's Ada Duan, Vice President of Digital Business and Franchise Management at Lucasfilm's Interactive Division. Turns out there's plenty of reason to bring in Binks. He's actually a very popular character among kids. According to Duan, once we figured out what we wanted that three-week experience to be, we all dove in and said, let's do Star Wars A New Hope. Interesting, in terms of surveys that came back from all the kids' experiences, they said, where's Anakin? Where's Darth Maul? It was because this generation grew up with the Clone Wars. They wanted to know where their favorite characters were, like where's Jar Jar. So when we were deciding how much Star Wars we should bring into the Infinity, we were like, please, let's not only focus on the classic trilogy. We need to bring in the Phantom Menace as well as the Star Wars Rebels. Vignocci, another executive at Disney, said that the main reason Disney Infinity's 3.0 starter pack is focused on episodes 1 through 3 and not the Star Wars classic trilogy. He said, our audience is 6 to 12 years old, and this was the property that was most relevant to them, he said. So, Paul, the thing that, I have a DVD called The People vs. George Lucas, and it is true that kids under a certain age relate more to the prequel trilogy because that's the one they saw in theaters, you know.
Right.
Luke, Leia, and everybody from the original trilogy is, like, for them, watching some movies from the 50s. You know, it's like, oh yeah, they existed, but we're not emotionally attached to them.
Right, and there's no reason that they should be.
Yeah. So, is Disney Infinity 6 to 12 years old audience, really? I mean...
I would say 8 to 12.
It's friendly towards them. I mean, it's a game they can play that their parents don't have to watch over their shoulder to make sure they're not getting any bad stuff.
Right. I mean, and therein lies the core of it. I mean, clearly there's going to be, you know, the large, dare we call them, Disney version of Brony component that is going to, you know, that's going to play the game that Disney didn't really intend on. But that's because Disney appeals to, you know, consumers of all ages.
Yeah, I mean,
has that, you know, that wonderful nostalgia factor.
Well, look at the new Pixar movie that just came out this weekend, Inside Out. It's got 98% on...
Give me a spoiler, I will kill you.
I haven't seen it yet. It's got 98%... It's got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And from what I understand from the reviews is that while it really speaks to kids, you know, adults will get a lot of stuff out of it too, because, you know, it's different perspectives. You know, this girl is dealing with emotions and the kids are going to be experiencing those emotions, you know, while the adults are nodding their head and says, yeah, I remember that. You know, I mean, it's a different thing with film when you're doing a game based on films. I mean, I don't know.
Games based on movies are always terrible.
Well, that's not entirely true. Not all the time. I mean, Tron 2.0 is great. Tron 2.0 was awesome.
Nope, terrible video game.
Anyways.
It was a terrible video game.
No, it wasn't. You haven't played it. It's a shooter.
It was horrific.
Tron 2.0?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Tron Evolutions here.
It doesn't mesh with the audience that the film was going after. The same way that the E.T. video game was too hard for the little kids that like...
What? Okay, so getting beyond that right now... how about all those Lego games? Traveler's Tales Lego games. Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, and okay. So anyway, getting back to the topic at hand, I don't think anybody's gonna be brokenhearted not to play Luke Skywalker or Chewbacca in a video game. You know, I think there's less disappointment, right? I mean, so what if you're playing Queen Amidala, right? In a video game, you're controlling it, you're creating the story. It's not the prequel movie, it's just a character that you get to control now.
Okay, I'm not...
I'm just saying that it's not that disappointing if you don't control Luke or Leia or Han or Chewbacca. If you have Queen Amidala, Qui-Gon Jinn, young Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, because you're creating the story.
It's not that these characters aren't going to come. It just makes more sense for them to be prioritized later because...
That's true.
Because, I mean, you get the initial buy-in for the Star Wars playsets with the parts of the franchise that are more relevant to a younger audience now, because... The adults who are more fond of Luke and Leia and Han will go ahead and buy those figures when they come out 9 months from now. You know, they'll wait a year for that and then hey kids, look, this is what Dad liked when he was young. I mean, so there's definitely a smart business purpose behind this.
Yeah,
it's just like a prime example. In Infinity, at the tail end of Infinity 1.0, they released the Anna and Elsa sister pack, or whatever it is, where you could play the two figures that took the company by surprise, because they were rushed into production for that first year.
Especially since Frozen was in development hell for a long time, because they kept on diddling with the script.
Right, but so they didn't know, I mean, but you could see that the ongoing changes with Frozen are... shown in this toy and when it came out.
Yeah.
I was saying something really important and it's about to slip out of my head.
You're talking about relevance to adults and kids.
Right. Oh, okay. So Anna and Elsa, highly relevant at the time when the toys were forced into production. And so now this year at, and they only did those two figures from the highly successful franchise, which frankly is like printing money.
Well, let me see. Was there a huge demand for Olaf? And
well, that's the thing, is now that we are 2 years down the line, now we're getting around to, you know, not having one of the more obscure Disney characters, maybe something like, you know, from older Disney or from the Disney Afternoon or whatever, because in favor of that, you know, that was asked to make room for Olaf, because quite frankly, Olaf is just going to sell more. Did Olaf need to be, you know, he's not a main character. Did he need to be in the front?
He's a comic relief, though. I mean,
he's there. You know, he's throughout the movie. But if we only have time to do, you know, if we only have time to get one or two or three of these figures into production for this year, you know, is it going to be Olaf, or is Olaf of a scale where we can, you know, put him off for a year or two and still be able to count on him selling? And I think that is what is showing is the difference of opinion about whether or not Luke and Leia are that kind of character, and, you know, in a similar space as Olaf.
Well,
and, you know, I really do think that he is, that they are, and it's a really smart call, because anybody who really identifies with or enjoys Luke and Leia and their generation, they'll still sell. I mean, those characters are 40 freaking years old. So whether,
do you think,
you know, whether those toys come this year or next year, it's not really, you know, important to me or anybody else.
You mentioned something. I wonder if they're going to come out with Disney Afternoon, you know, what's it called, characters then, like Tailspin or DuckTales or stuff like that.
Oh my God! And see, that's the thing. They don't. If that's the plan, they'll put those towards the end of the entire product's life cycle. You know, they don't need to come out right out the gate. They're still trying to make their, you know, they're trying to grab all the money that they can while it's still on the table. They're making fast dimes.
I wonder how many
fast nickels right now.
How many?
They'll make slow dimes, slow dimes later.
I wonder how many 12-year-olds know who Kit Cloudkicker is. You see, that's the question. So, anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
From Alpha Shard, add electroshock headset. Why? I can't fathom why anyone would pay $100 to do this on purpose. At VR Horror Survival, I think this is a good idea, and I thought DayZ was a survivor horror game. I do tend to get jumpy with various mobs from different games, so having it VR would be even worse. I wanted to give my impressions of E3. I have to say that Bathsheba just...
Bathsheba, Bethesda, come on, Paul.
I keep doing that. I was admittedly on the fence about Fallout 4. I wasn't sure I wanted to even look at it. Then Todd Howard took to the stage and converted me to a rabid fanatic of Fallout 4. He did a fantastic job of building up, revealing the various features of the game, showing the great detail of the character creation, adding that you could play as a woman. To be fair, you can do this in the entire franchise.
Not in Fallout 3. That was the big problem that people had with Fallout 3. You couldn't play a female. Okay.
Then the sheer amount of vibrant color, which goes a long way to the look better than the drab colors of Fallout 3. Then he went into the sheer amount of weapon customization and then stated, oh, you can build settlements, at which point I lost it and had to have this game. Then he revealed that you can have a real freaking Pip-Boy.
By the way, the Pip-Boy edition was sold out, and Bethesda is indicating that they may produce more of the Pip-Boy editions. But, you know, I'm ambivalent about it, because basically it's just going to be this plastic piece of thing that you're going to put over your smartphone to turn it into a Pip-Boy. For those who don't know what a Pip-Boy is, it's in the game.
Like a Warboy?
It's, did you see Mad Max?
I did see Mad Max.
It was great, wasn't it?
No.
You didn't like it?
No, it was a visual. It was an assault on my senses. I didn't care for it.
Okay, so anyway, the Pip-Boy is this thing you wear around your wrist, which is basically a gigantic PDA, which tells you everything about your biological signs and what's up. You know, it's a PDA that you wear on your wrist. So
it's a HUD. I mean,
it's not a HUD. It's something you look up. You put up your, what's it called? If you want to look at, you bring up your wrist and you look at it, and then you put it down again.
Okay, I feel the distinction. Now, in my soul, thank you. After that presentation, everything else just felt lackluster. Even the lovely rendered Doom just failed to impress me. When Adam Sizzler asked what's the difference about this Doom, they then stated that it was speed and weapons, which to me is what every first-person shooter has or aspires to have. FPS in general just doesn't make me happy. Building does, and adding that to Fallout 4 is like making an entirely different game. I will most likely be building settlements across the wasteland like I'm building a new civilization. I may end up forgetting the main story entirely, as I will be busying myself acting like I'm playing a modded Civ game to look like Fallout. I saw the HoloLens. HoloLens?
Yeah, it's the augmented reality thing that Microsoft showed off.
I saw the HoloLens, which is a great concept and idea, but it seems like the control of it was a little rough there. I've been told this game is 2 times the size of Skyrim. One developer spent 400 hours exploring and was still finding new things. I suspect Jonah may not want to play this.
What? I think he's talking about Minecraft. I haven't tried Minecraft yet. I may.
I do like when you guys have genre talk like the D&D, Vampire Masquerade, and Doctor Who. Question of the week, I prefer a voiced character, someone who has an identity. The blank state is nice, but I feel like I need a complete story, and knowing that my character never says anything can feel like kind of gimmicky at times, especially when other characters are basically having to be your voice.
See, that's my thing. If your character doesn't speak, then no one in the game should speak, right? So that everybody's silent, so they have to communicate with other ways. If you're always mute and the other characters are talking to you, it might make you feel like a creep. You know?
Well, I mean, it depends on how it's handled. I've seen it both ways a number of times over the years, so I'm a little
ambivalent.
Ambivalent, yeah. I don't particularly care.
Okay, so this week's question of the week. If Nintendo isn't debuting a new console, should it skip E3 next year? That's the question. How about you, Paul? If Nintendo doesn't debut a new console, should it skip E3?
That is an entirely preposterous question to even be asking. It's not about, you know, what is this an opportunity to announce? It's what is going on with this company. And quite frankly, this year, the answer to that question was quite simply nothing really that we want to talk about. While I can understand that that's disappointing for Nintendo fans, myself included.
By the way, a little disclaimer here. You were not pleased with Nintendo's outing this year.
I really wasn't, and I said that, you know, I said that the other day.
Right.
I definitely did feel like there was nothing really worth talking about. There was Super Mario Maker, which I expressed my opinion that doesn't really, to me, count as a game. It's more of a tool. You know, you're eliminating the position of, you know, a content designer.
I don't think so.
So it just kind of bothered me. That was their major product that they were showing off, and it didn't really feel, it was just kind of disappointing.
Well, one of our listeners...
There was a knockoff Zelda for the 3DS, and there were some new cute amiibos, but it wasn't there wasn't that one thing that everybody just had to see at Nintendo's booth.
Right. One of our listeners told me, didn't write it in, but told me directly that they were really, really disappointed with Star Fox. You know, they thought that Nintendo was going half-assed with it. I mean, that was their opinion, you know. And I didn't see anything all that strange about Star Fox. Maybe it wasn't shiny, you know, which could fill the Wii U's full capabilities. But, you know, he was a huge Star Fox fan, and he was disappointed with what they showed off.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it was hard for me to find anything to be excited about.
Yeah.
Because they weren't talking about anything. I mean, it was just like, no, we're here. Business as usual, guys.
But you were excited about Infinity 3.0.
I'm kind of excited about Infinity 3.
You were excited about Lego Dimensions even more, I think.
Here's the deal. I had to go get the inside scoop from some people that I still know who are working there. And I was really disappointed by the thus far announced lineup of 3.0 figures. I'm not, you know, particularly interested in the... you know, in the more recent Star Wars, so I felt kind of left out of that part of the franchise. There was nothing announced for Marvel, as far as I've heard. And there were three figures, you know, aside from the Inside Out collection, which, I mean, fantastic. One wonderful IP that I haven't gotten to know yet, but plan on doing so. there was a new version of Mickey, which I have now, and a matching Minnie. And they really do more remind me not of my Mickey. They remind me more of like a Playhouse Disney, like Disney Junior kind of Mickey Mouse. And the only other interesting character that was released, that was announced, is Mulan.
I just want to see your face if they announce a Rose Tyler for Lego Dimensions. I just want to see your reaction.
But yeah, I mean, I did have to go. So here is the scoop. There are more figures for 3.0 that are already in production, which are going to be announced, and they will more focus on, you know, that segment of the lineup that I was disappointed to not have heard from yet.
So anyways, that was our question of the week. Again, it's if Nintendo isn't debuting a new console, should it skip E3 next year? We should listen to your opinion.
No, because they have to announce something.
I know you think it's...
To kind of
it's,
sit there and do nothing is a little silly.
Well, they don't have to do nothing, just do something later, that's all.
Even if they're just announcing, like, Mario and Zelda together again in the same year for the first time ever, you know, that would be new. And that doesn't have to be a new console. They just have to have some kind of news.
Well, let's hear what our listeners have to say. Hopefully, this will spur some additional people to write in. You know, and we know who you are because we know you're downloading the podcast, but you're not writing in. We want to hear your voice. Maybe you're shy. You don't have to use your real name. You know. So look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. You can enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. By the way, we passed a milestone in likes on Facebook, so we're happy about that.
Or what's the milestone?
100.
We have 100 likes. Yay.
We have 100 and some odd now. Or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can follow us on Twitter, me at Jonah Falcon, no space, and for Paul at StagerMonkey, StagerMonkey.
Yeah, I really should pick a new name. Well, I'll get around to that.
But you can do it like, you know, StagerMonkey. You know.
I want to shoot you.
Well, you don't want your own club? I offended the great...
Oh, Jonah.
I offended the great god Mickey, didn't I?
No, you just became boring and predictable. That's the worst thing.
Well, it's better than boring and predictable than unpredictable, isn't it?
Boring and predictable, Jonah.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.